Good morning. Like dairy, I hope to present you all with some additional data as to why it's bad to eat animal feces. In case you were on the fence about that one.
You all right?
No, I'm good. All right. So, an estimated 500,000 workers are employed in laboratories in the United States. Although the annual number of laboratory-acquired infections has decreased since 1965, a survey by the American Society of Microbiology found that 33% of laboratories reported having at least one occurrence of a laboratory-acquired infection. Laboratory-acquired infections represent an occupational hazard unique to laboratory workers. Regulatory authority of worker safety in animal laboratories can be unclear. On July 30, 2014, Animal Research Facility A reported three workers with positive Cryptosporidium stool specimens and 10 staff with severe gastrointestinal illness to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. On July 14th, 2 3-day-old calves were delivered to Animal Research Facility A and housed in a low oxygen chamber in order to simulate pulmonary hypertension. On July 18th, two additional calves arrived to serve as controls and were housed in a regular atmospheric environment. Control calves were euthanized for animal studies on July 21st. And experimental calves were euthanized on July 29th and July 31st. Infections with Cryptosporidium parvum, a parasite, result in prolonged diarrhea, abdominal cramps, fever, anorexia, malaise, and vomiting. Transmission occurs through ingestion of oocysts, which are immediately infectious upon being excreted in feces, and occur from direct or indirect animal contact, or from foodborne, waterborne, or person-to-person transmission. Pre-weaned calves are common animal reservoirs for Cryptosporidium parvum. The infectious dose required for illness is low, leading to high infectivity. In addition, Cryptosporidium is extremely chlorine tolerant, making it difficult to disinfect. The incubation period is 1 to 12 days, with an average of 7 days. We initiated an investigation to identify additional cases, determine risk factors for illness, and implement control measures. Oh my gosh. What happens with my EIS script here?
Yeah.
You're all used to this, I'm sure. Oh, I got it.
Oh, sorry.
I'm gonna hook it here underneath. There we go. The methods used to investigate this outbreak included epidemiological and environmental investigations and laboratory testing. To review case definitions for this outbreak, a probable case included diarrhea in one of the following: diarrhea duration of greater than or 72 hours, abdominal cramps, or vomiting in a person who worked in Animal Research Facility A during July 14th to July 31st, 2014. A confirmed case met the criteria for a probable case, but also had laboratory evidence of Cryptosporidium infection by direct fluorescent antibody, or DFA, or polymerase chain reaction, or PCR. To understand infection risk factors, we conducted a cohort study. We interviewed all laboratory workers with a standardized questionnaire and collected information on demographic risk factors, symptom information, workplace behaviors, training, and personal protective equipment, or PPE, use. The State Health Department and the Tri-County Health Department performed an announced initial visual inspection of the research facility on August 5th. To assess the room design, understand the laboratory's processes, and observe PPE donning and doffing. At this point, all calves have been euthanized and staff are no longer working within the areas of concern. An additional announced visit was performed on August 13th after cleaning procedures of the facility had been performed in order to obtain environmental swabs to assess for ongoing contamination. Of the 28 people who took care of the calves, 20 met the case definition. One of the workers was removed from further analysis because they did not meet the case definition and were also not well. The overall attack rate was 74%. Ill and well persons did not differ significantly by age, ethnicity, or sex. Cases reported symptom onset dates from July 23rd to August 1st, with the peak occurring on July 29th. The blue bars represent probable cases, and the yellow bars represent confirmed cases. The most common symptoms were diarrhea, abdominal cramps, fever, weight loss, and vomiting. The average total duration of illness was 7.5 days. One person was hospitalized, and there were no deaths. The original 3 stool specimens were tested in an infectious disease clinic and were found to be Cryptosporidium parvum positive by DFA. 11 additional cases submitted stool specimens, and local health agencies helped facilitate collection and delivery to the state laboratory. We conducted Cryptosporidium testing using DFA or PCR, norovirus testing by PCR, and bacterial culture at the state public health laboratory. The state laboratory used 2 tests, DFA first, and if that was negative, used PCR to look for other pathogens. These tests, DFA and PCR, have high specificity and positive predictive values. These tests are used as confirmatory tests for both the CDC and the National Notifiable Disease Surveillance System. Less specific tests, such as rapid card tests, were not utilized in this study. Here you can see we have 4 positive results by DFA. 1 result was negative by DFA and later shown to be positive by PCR, and this was positive twice by PCR. We do not know why this result was negative on DFA and then later found to be positive by PCR. Average hours of training varied, although not significantly, between those well and ill, with an average of 2.1 hours of training for ill workers and 5.4 hours for well workers. Perhaps more importantly, the median hours of training for all workers was 2, and this included a mandatory hour for respiratory fit testing. And the content of the training was not standardized. We looked for a dose response effect by increasing exposure or number of shifts worked, resulting in increasing likelihood of illness. Interestingly, we found that well workers work significantly more shifts than ill workers. To further investigate this relationship, we looked to see if ill workers worked fewer shifts because they were sick and subsequently took days off. We reviewed worker time logs and found that of the 26 workers, 16 worked all shifts, including some shifts while they were ill. 2 workers missed a shift due to illness, and 2 workers could not be categorized due to documentation. This means that between 80 and 90% of ill workers worked all their shifts, and therefore time off for illness cannot account for the relationship found between increasing exposure resulting in decreased likelihood of illness. So like my colleague here found, we think what we actually were seeing here was an immune response. So studies have shown that characteristic antibody responses develop after repeated Cryptosporidium parvum infections, and that persons with pre-existing antibodies may be less likely to develop disease. Upon further investigation, we found that well workers had in fact worked in animal husbandry longer than ill workers, thus increasing the likelihood of having developed some level of immunity to Cryptosporidium. This could explain why staff with increased exposure may have had a decreased likelihood of having the disease in this particular outbreak. All 27 staff performed animal care tasks with the experimental calves. Many of these tasks led to substantial fecal exposure. For example, taking rectal temperatures, and power washing and squeegeeing feces from the floor. No specific tasks were associated with increased risk of illness. Sorry about my posture in this picture. It's really bad. Carry on. As shown by this picture,
we wouldn't have recognized you.
I'm standing so straight right now.
For EIS at this time in your training, looks pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. So as you can see from this picture, the laboratory required the following PPE. Scrubs, a hairnet, a fluid-resistant gown, rubber boots, a rubber apron, an oxygen mask, a face mask with face shield, gloves, and an N95 for transfer. It is notable that when doffing PPE, removing one's gloves first versus removing gloves last was significantly associated with a greater likelihood of illness. No statistically significant differences in other PPE worn was noted. However, it was found that practice about what was worn was inconsistent across both ill and well workers. 16 workers reported removing their oxygen mask and face mask numerous times in order to speak with a colleague while in the low oxygen chamber. In addition, many workers admitted being told, quote, "You will get sick while you work here, and there's nothing you can do about it." Here is a blueprint of Facility A. As you can see, the layout is quite complex. Areas in pink are where workers were required to use PPE. N95s are also used in the areas noted in pink, as Facility A uses sheep as animal models in other research, and the facility has had two known Q fever outbreaks in laboratory workers in the past. Highlighted in yellow is the locker room, where staff changed into PPE and showered out. The low oxygen room, which housed the experimental calves, and the regular atmospheric room, which housed the control calves, are noted by the arrows. Also note that to get to the low oxygen room and between there and the locker room, there are numerous doors that workers must pass through. Inspection of the laboratory noted numerous concerns that could facilitate transmission of cryptosporidium. These included facility design issues. For example, the laboratory that housed the experimental calves was inadequate. With the floor sloping away from the drain, and no sink located within the antechamber where doffing was done. There was a lack of PPE availability, and we found unclear documentation and knowledge of administrative responsibilities or oversight. All environmental specimens were negative using PCR. There were limitations of this study. The high attack rate and small cohort size made detecting significance of risk factors challenging. We were also unable to test calves for Cryptosporidium parvum carriage as they were euthanized before we were alerted of the outbreak. This outbreak resulted in one hospitalization and a substantial attack rate of 74%. All workers had heavy exposure to feces. Training procedures were not adequate to ensure workers were familiar with and used appropriate PPE. Overall, there was a confusion about what to wear and no consistency surrounding donning and doffing procedures or hand washing. The laboratory that housed the experimental calves was also inadequately designed. The majority of Cryptosporidium outbreaks are associated with recreational water. Although rarely reported, animal-associated occupational outbreaks have been documented. Most recently, they've been reported among laboratory workers, veterinary students, and first responders. Given that pre-weaned calves are known reservoirs of Cryptosporidium, laboratory administrators should take concrete steps to assure workers' well-being and to ensure a culture of safety within their facility. Written recommendations were provided to laboratory administrators to facilitate improvements and prevent future outbreaks. Recommendations were based on epidemiological findings and the hierarchy of hazard controls. I'm sure you all have seen this one before. So controlling exposure to occupational hazards, like Cryptosporidium parvum, is a fundamental goal in protecting workers. A hierarchy of controls has been created in order to guide the development of effective control measures. The design of the hierarchy highlights that controls at the top require less dependence on workers and are therefore often more effective and protective than those at the bottom. A quick overview of the hierarchy as it relates to this outbreak. Elimination means removing the hazard. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment did not want to stop the CAF studies, as they yield valuable research data. Teamwork. Thank you. Substitution means replacing the hazard. Pre-weaned calves are the animal model best suited to answer the specific research questions in Facility A and could not be easily substituted. Neither elimination or substitution are appropriate control measures for this laboratory. We therefore focus on engineering, administrative, and PPE controls. Engineering controls are design elements that remove the hazard at the source. Administrative controls are changes in work procedures, policies, standard operating procedures, and training, with the goal of reducing the duration and frequency of exposure. PPE is clothing designed to create a barrier against workplace hazards when they are not addressed by the other controls. PPE has the highest level of human dependence for implementation and is thus considered a less effective control measure. Now let's look at what we recommended broken down by hierarchy category. Engineering controls are design elements that minimize the hazard at the source. We recommended numerous improvements in engineering controls, focusing on improvements in room design. We recommended removing non-necessary equipment, improving the floor slope by having the floor slope towards the drain in order to increase fecal drainage, installing a hands-free sink in the laboratory antechamber, reviewing the use of the pressure washer, and reviewing the use of alcohol-based hand sanitizer, as this is not sufficient and should be removed from the SOP. Recommendations for changes in administrative controls were twofold, looking at both improved administrative responsibilities as well as improved training. Our recommendations for improving administrative responsibilities, including having one individual responsible for training, SOPs, and also for terminal cleaning of the laboratory, having ongoing monitoring for illness during employment and for 2 weeks afterwards, making sure that sick leave policies are adequate and also non-punitive, and that any outbreak should be reported to CDPHE within 24 hours. The other category of administrative controls we recommended was changes to improve the standardized training. Recommendations included having standardized training for all staff on research procedures, PPE donning and doffing, hand washing, and showering, that training begins before work starts, and that all training should be documented. Although PPE is considered the least effective hazard control, it's still important, and so we recommended that the laboratory develop standard operating procedures for PPE, including developing an SOP for donning and doffing with specific instructions, that practice be required before work begins, that donning and doffing posters be developed, that all PPE should be available for all shifts, and finally, that locker rooms should encourage safe decontamination by providing hot water and soap. To the credit of Facility A, they implemented all of our recommendations as well as additional control measures beyond what we asked. They implemented all engineering controls requested, as well as adding epoxy to the laboratory floor to promote ease of both cleaning and disinfection. Facility A implemented all administrative controls requested, in addition to decreasing the number of staff in order to reduce the risk of exposure. All PPE recommendations were also implemented. There have been no additional cases of Cryptosporidium since July of 2014. Finally, this outbreak highlights the importance of engendering a culture of safety for human workers within animal research laboratories. Safety of humans and human research has well-established control mechanisms. Safety of animals and animal research is overseen by the International Animal Care Use Committee, or IACUC. Safety of humans in animal studies is less clear. Oftentimes, the U.S. Department of Agriculture or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration have oversight over human worker safety within animal research facilities. However, These federal bodies do not have oversight over state governmental agencies. In that case, laboratory worker safety oversight falls to the primary investigator, and this can create a potential conflict of interest. In this case, a biosafety officer and occupational health nurse were involved in the investigation, but the ultimate authority rested with the primary investigator. This case highlights the importance of laboratory administrators promoting a culture of safety within their facilities and providing adequate training and guidance to workers in order to ensure their safety. Thank you very much.
So we have time for questions. Bob?
Thank you, that was great. I had a couple of questions.
Sure.
You mentioned they're called pre-weaned.
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 So they're still drinking mama's milk.
And are those known to be carriers?
Yes.
Crypto, so that's kind of, is that known within the...
Yes. And yes. The veterinarians in the room could speak to this better than I could, but I did talk with our state health vet, mm-hmm. and the word she used was ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous.
Okay. So
have they used these in the past, or is this the first time that they have brought these two pre-weaned calves in?
They perform this research study with pre-weaned calves a few times a year. Anecdotally, while talking with staff members, numerous of these folks told me that they had had symptoms that were consistent with cryptosporidium on a previous time of employment within this facility while working with these pre-weaned calves. So we don't know that was cryptosporidium, but it certainly could have been. You know, and as I pointed out, we've had some issues in the past with other outbreaks. We have two known Q fever outbreaks, so we're really trying to work with this lab on protecting their worker safety.
Other questions? Yeah, and back.
About your PCR that you used, was that a crypto-specific PCR or a multiplex?
They used the multiplex.
It seems odd that they were PCR negative, but
DNA
positive,
PCR was negative.
Yeah.
Sorry. In back. Yeah.
Yes, these are basically recommendations that you made, and so were copies of that also sent to, say, the Department of Agriculture or another group who could maybe force the company to take them seriously, or how does that play out?
So the State Department of Health does have regulatory authority within the realm of an outbreak, which this is. And so we've been working with this facility, going back and forth. We'll give them recommendations. They send us their SOP. We edit it and send it back. And to their credit, they've done everything we've asked and then some. And so we're hoping we don't have to elevate it further, and we can really be partners for going forward.
And for the occupational safety and health folks in the room, it's not unusual in an outbreak situation that the state health officials will work with the establishment without necessarily doing a regulation, but they still have force of law in terms of being able to compel even significant changes. Bob?
I actually have another question. You may have mentioned this, but who picked up the suspicion that these were crypto cases?
The occupational health nurse.
And where was he or she?
So she works within this particular organization. I don't want to say too much and like give away who it is.
Yeah.
And then sent these folks to an infectious disease clinic where they were tested.
So they had an occupational health nurse as part of their operation.
Unfortunately, her power is sort of limited, and everything sort of falls to the PI, the primary investigator. Sort of has the ultimate authority.
So she is, I mean, it was to her credit that she...
Absolutely.
She recognized it,
sent them to infectious disease, and we were called. So she did everything right.
Anne?
I have a question for Derek. Carolyn, was there how many person hours did it take you to review all of those records? I feel your pain. Any idea how many hours it took?
No. A lot. But because there was 300 data elements, you can use kind of your own algorithms to narrow or hone in on what you're looking for using like filtering and concepts. So you know it was definitely at least a full day's of work going through them.
So they were all electronic to start with?
Yeah.
So I might add, because I'm going to talk about this tomorrow in a rapid fire, but we've gone through a similar experience in Maryland, but our NEDS system doesn't actually contain the occupational field. So I will say one of the joys of having medical residents is I can't tell you how many medical resident hours. We did not violate the medical resident requirements in terms of training hours. There was no on-call time, and there were not sequential nights slept in the department, but it was a lot of hours on paper. Ken?
So do you have any idea? So if you look at CDC publications, they talk about crypto being from water, but I'm not aware anybody's done anything that like Derry has done to look at, what percentage, is occupation ever a cause?
I don't know that I found any studies that look specifically at crypto within occupational. There's like small outbreaks that you can find in the literature. They do always look at data related to water. The waterborne folks do with crypto, but as far as occupational outbreaks, and it's hard to say if they're happening and not being reported, or they're just not.
Well, one happened at my university this past fall, and I didn't report it to anybody.
And that's what I think is probably happening. It's not, they're not getting reported. And you'll hear veterinary students say that everyone gets crypto at some point.
Yeah,
right.
No, I just got crypto.
She's got crypto. Kara Cherry in the back. Crypto survivor.
Yeah, back. Derek?
Did you, it was great you were able to go on site and, look at these facilities, look at the room, make the engineering control recommendations. Did you see any other health and safety issues? Because you say these low oxygen chambers, was there any other risk due to this, like, kind of unique research, or maybe this type of research isn't unique? It seems kind of...
Yes. I think that's an interesting point, and not to get too much off the crypto, but you have your background, and so you do sort of see things. So there was some issues with the oxygen. They had folks wearing face masks or nasal cannulas, and they had it on 2 liters. So you shouldn't have 2 liters on with a face mask, because you can rebreathe your own CO2 and mess up your acid-base balance. So I did bring that up to the primary investigator, and so they've changed that now in their SOP going forward. So they've been very receptive to most, if not all, of the recommendations that we've had.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.